Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing well. You know, I did something I haven't done in a while. I drove my kid to school this morning.
Uh-huh. How'd that go?
Well, it went pretty well, but, you know, the neighbor kid already has her license. My kid's getting her permit next week, and I drove her to school. But now I have to be on my toes and do everything according to the rules. Because she's studying the manual. Well, why did you do that? Why didn't you hit your blinker? You know, what's right of way? It's a different experience. But I'll tell you what, I missed the bonding time. I enjoy driving her, and now I recognize I got maybe a year of this, of driving her to school, and then it's over.
Right. So now you're going to start driving her?
I'm gonna drive her to school more for the next year. So I'm just giving you a little advance warning. I'm coming to the studio a little bit later than usual.
Okay. Well, family first, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So this is gonna be a fun segment. We got our friend Barbie in the gallery. So
yeah, she's our designated guest acquirer, right? Isn't that her job now?
Barbie Brown, marketing extraordinaire. Right. And a little bit later in the program, we're going to hear from the guys at JCS Sports. So that's going to be fun. We're going to talk sports and
told them that you were almost a professional baseball player?
Yeah, I had everything you needed. I had all the tools you needed for professional ball except talent.
Except for that. We were lacking one thing.
Just one thing. You know, right. And sometimes that can be the difference between, you know, being a class clown and being a professional
exactly.
ball player. So I get a chance to, I think I will drop in a few baseball stories.
That's good. I can't wait.
But we're going to have a real show before that. So it is my distinct pleasure. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we are going to have the founder and CEO with Every Woman Works, Miss Tilly O'Neill Kiles. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to tell the audience about our organization.
Well, this is going to be a fun conversation. I'll just tell you right off the bat, the Payton men for several generations now, we really have embraced this idea of our women working. So I'm very much in tune with this whole theme. My wife has a real job with a real company.
Yes.
Otherwise, I wouldn't be here doing this. But that said, tell us a little bit about Every Woman Works. What's this all about?
I think the difference is that we work with women who have barriers against employment, whether it's recovering from alcohol and drugs, homelessness, domestic violence, assistance to government assistance, being caught up in that kind of a lifestyle. And then they want to move from being dependent on the system or being dependent on alcohol or drugs to becoming self-sufficient, and that's what we do.
Now, how did you personally get involved to make that happen? Like, you know, it's one thing, those are all noble goals, and I'm sure a lot of people, you know, feel that way. They would like that to happen. But somebody like you, and you specifically, said, you know what, I'm not going to just think about doing this. I'm going to kind of roll up my sleeves and get in there and try to help people personally.
Well, after 36 years in corporate, I worked for AT&T for 36 years, and I worked in the School of Business. And my responsibilities was to help leaders to be better integrity leaders for the future. And after 36 years, you begin to feel like you may not be making a difference, because they reward certain behaviors, and some of those behaviors were incongruent with what we were teaching. And I felt unfulfilled, but I felt that I had a lot to offer, and I asked, I prayed about it. You know, I want to do something to make a difference. After retiring from my organization, they contracted me back. And one morning I was in bed, and I got a call from Lucy Hall, Mary Hall Freedom House, and that is the number one recovery center, residential recovery center for women and women with children. And she said that I need to take my organization to the next level, and I would like to have you to come and help me to become CARF accredited. And I started to work with her, and she says, of course, I'm a not-for-profit and you will not be getting paid the kind of money you're accustomed to. And so I started working there. And because I worked there, I had an opportunity to meet the clients. And I had to do quality survey, and I had an opportunity to ask them questions like, what was your drug of choice? And how many times you relapsed? And how many children do you have? And how have you been married? And did your father or your mother, did they do drugs? So I got a sense that they would leave clean and sober, but because they were still dependent on a system or on a person, they would relapse and come back. So I got this epiphany, you know, that if you give a person a fish, you feed them for a day, but if you teach them the fish, they can help to feed themselves and their children for a lifetime. And so that's that was the concept that I opened the business of Every Woman Works, because every woman works.
Every woman should work. Let's make sure we get that message out today. Every woman should.
Well, they're
be
working in one manner or another.
Now, do you find that, are there any statistics to back up that females are more or less prone to relapse than males in similar situations? Or does it all really come down to the kind of support system you can provide when they're coming out of that trough?
And that is very important, because, see, you can teach people skills, and we do, resume writing, customer service skills, parenting skills, life skills, but there need to be a transformation from the inside out. They need to start believing in themselves again, believing that they have a purpose. And I think that identity get lost in all of the stuff that has happened to them, and they start defining themselves. I'm an addict, you know. I'm a prostitute, I'm this. And so one of the things that we do is, and we call it the Hour of Power, we spend time with Rick Warren and Joyce Myers, the Battlefield of the Mind, to help them to understand that if they can think something, if they can conceive it, they can achieve it, that they need to change their mind, and then they can change their lives.
And I'll tell you what, Joyce Meyer, I catch her on TV now and again. She doesn't put up with excuses.
Yeah,
she doesn't
suffer
a lack of personal accountability for 1 minute. Right?
Because here's the key. If I blame you for my situation, and if I do not take responsibility for my choices that I made, to say whatever my situation and circumstances, I am here because I made some choices. If I give up that power to you or blame someone else, then I cannot take the power to change it. But if I take the responsibility and say that I'm responsible, I am the programmer of my life, then I can make a decision to change it.
Now, when you're working with people, can you tell kind of at a glance now that you've been doing this a little bit, if this person's going to relapse, or if this person, the light bulb went off and they're going to stick with it?
You know, I don't want you to think that my only universe of women that we serve are women in recovery, because we also serve women on TANF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Family,
right,
where they're getting government assistance, and that will not last forever anymore, 60 months. So they are sent to me so that they can acquire some job skills so that they can become valuable members of society also, because that's dependency. That's being given a fish.
Right.
And so, and then the other women that we serve are women who are locked away because of partners against domestic violence. So they're hiding out. And they may have done that for maybe a year or two, and now it's time for them to, you know, become an active member of society. So they come. So I guess what I'm saying is their transformation must take place from the inside out, and they have to believe that they can get a job, that they can take care of themselves and their children. And that's what we do, and that's what we do well. We've served over 800 women. 85% of those women have become employed, and 65% of them have kept the jobs. So I know that when this transformation, this major paradigm shift happens, it changes their behavior.
She's hitting 850, guys. My baseball guys in here know that would be a pretty good stat, right?
That's pretty impressive.
Even they can't teach somebody to hit 850.
And they're good. So
these guys are pros. So are you getting some corporate support? Are companies
yes,
leaning in and trying to help too?
Because, you know, we all want to support anyone that wants to work, and rather than just wanting a handout. And the things that I'm learning is that most people do not want to be dependent, because when you are dependent, people can tell you what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, and they love having that control over you. So they no longer want to be dependent. They want to be self-sufficient, and there are organizations like GE Women Network. They come and help us to teach the women skills. There's also Kimberly Clark. They come. So we do have corporate sponsors, but the good news is that they're such excellent role models for the women, because all of the women that come, because they work for those companies, did not have grow up with the flower bed of ease. Some of them have stories similar to the women who are attending our program. And so when they see that they too can make it, you know, they went back to school, they got the degree, and now they're working at, you know, a large company, that gives them hope.
Now, you've recently been awarded something, is that right? Is that we're here for the best and brightest? Are you involved in that group?
Yes, we've been nominated.
Nominated.
Yeah, but you're on the radio now.
No, forget it. They got to give it to you now.
You show up to this show. It's a slam dunk. Okay.
Now, can you talk a little bit about that? Because how does that award work, and what is what made you eligible for it?
Well, number one, my staff person nominated our organization as being the best place to work, and I only have 10 people that are part of my staff, and they tell me that they're underpaid and what. But this is, but the key is that they do this work because they feel that we make a difference in the lives of these women and children, and we see it every day. We literally see lives being changed. And because of that, we know that we have to love these women until they learn to love themselves. So we have to practice what we teach. We have to practice being proactive. We have to practice thinking win-win. So because, these women are very smart, and you can't pull the wool over their heads, because if they had some of them had a habit for 10 years, but yet they were smart enough to pay for that. So they are very, very shrewd. And so you can't fool them. And I think that what they feel is the genuine love and concern that we want to help them to make a difference and want to help their children. Because, see, when you impact the woman, you also impact the children. So getting back to your question, I think it's a good place to work because we help change lives. And I cannot think of anything more rewarding than that.
Well, can you maybe share a tip for people who can't afford to pay their staff, maybe what they would like to pay their staff? Do you have other incentives that make it a rewarding place to work, or is just the work itself?
I think in this case, I think it's the work itself. I also think that the perks that they get when you are coaching someone and they come with tears running down their faces, says that 2 weeks ago I had an eviction notice on my door and now I have been approved for a Section 8 and I'm not only working a job, I'm working two jobs, and that's making a difference in my life because I don't have to depend on handouts and now I can get off of welfare. Crying and really saying that not only have that made a difference, but I feel differently about myself. I feel that I can achieve. We do dream boards, and they started to see those things that they see becoming a reality. You know, so I would just say that we say that human beings are our most important asset.
It's on all the posters.
Yes, yes, but we don't always treat them that way. You know, if you got to cut something, cut the budget, where do we cut first, right? We cut personnel, you know, rather than trying to come up with some other way of generating revenue. And we've been doing it for years. And so my background in corporate America, I know what I'm talking about. And so when you make people feel like what they do is important and it's appreciated, because you can't pay people for their brains, and that's where you get the creativity, and you can't pay them for their hands. The service that they offer you is because they want to help, you know.
So this business of providing emotional compensation, I think all of us would be wise, no matter what sector we're in, to put more attention toward building a path toward earning, having an opportunity to earn more and more of this emotional compensation.
And people doing the work that they have a talent for. I mean, that everyone's different, and we all have a gift. And when you find that this is a person's giftedness, and they do what they do best, and they want to do more of what they do best, so that's important, too, to make sure that whatever job duties and responsibility is aligned with that person's skills, talents, experience, and what they enjoy doing.
So what's on your plate near term? What are you trying to get accomplished over the next few months, aside from getting this award?
What are we trying to accomplish? Generating funds.
You need more money.
You need more money.
Lee's loaded.
You need more money. And so
he's in radio. Where all the money is?
Yeah, that's big bucks in radio.
Do you know one of the things that we've done, I believe in development coming from education, a background in education, I asked my staff to shift their paradigm, if you would, about seeing every woman work as a not-for-profit. that has the connotation of always asking and soliciting for funds. But to start looking at us as if we are an entrepreneurial enterprise,
right,
and to generate more revenue. So now we're really asking people to support a woman and her family, sponsor that woman, get to know that woman, and then when they graduate, because we do have a graduation, when they find a job, they can continue to mentor that person. So we're just you know, we're soliciting funds, but we want people to feel what we feel.
But that's a one-on-one connection. I like that better than just the general fund, right? Like, I'm supporting Cindy and her efforts.
I am Cindy and her three children.
Right.
You know, she's working up here at Target, but her children are going to school. We have women whose children are in college because they know that makes a difference.
Yeah.
I mean, we have some, you know what I wished? I wished I could have bought, excuse me a minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wished I could have bought some alumni so you could hear their testimony.
Well, maybe we'll do that sometime. Yeah. Or maybe even on the Make a Difference show. We have a show completely
focused on nonprofits.
That'd be a fun thing.
You could hear some stories of how they lived in the back of a station wagon and her children had to do their home assignment. And now she's living in a house in Alpharetta. And all three of her daughter has graduated from college, got her master's degree, and two of her other kids are in college. I mean, just some fascinating things that happen to people when they believe, when they really believe. As a matter of fact, let me get this in. Our mascot is the bumblebee. And the reason I selected the bumblebee, because aerodynamically, the bumblebee should not be able to fly because her body is so big and her wings are so small. But no one told the bumblebee that she couldn't fly. So she moves those wings at bullet speed and she flies because she believes she can fly. And that's what we have to do with the women. They have to reconnect with the fact that they were created to fly. And they were created that if they believe that they can achieve something, they can achieve it.
What a fantastic and inspiring way to wrap this segment. It's been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio, and we will have you back on this show or perhaps on the Make a Difference show. But before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you and learn more about the program if they need the help and or if they would like to contribute in some fashion.
We are currently, we just moved from Roswell to Sandy Springs, and our address is 100 Hanover Park Road, Suite 200, and it has an Atlanta mailing address. The telephone number there is 770-998-3392, but I would prefer that you go to our website, which is www.everywomanworks.org.
All right. Well, thank you, Miss Tilly.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, how about hanging out with us a little while?
I certainly will. I'm looking forward to it.
Terrific. All right, Lee, next up on Atlanta Business Radio today, we got the guys from JCS in the house. These gentlemen are with JCS Sports. We have with us Mr. Casey Smith and Ben Blumenthal. Welcome to the show, guys.
Morning, guys.
Thank you.
So, pretty inspiring segment. That's a hard act to follow.
Man, that was unbelievable.
We'll have to carve yours out and separate it for you or something. I don't know. But no, you guys are up to some neat stuff. Tell our listeners a little bit about the kind of work you do, what you're out there trying to do for folks.
What we've got is we have an indoor baseball facility in Kennesaw. We've got just under 25,000 square feet. What we do, personal training, one-on-one lessons, speed and agility training, team training, and we actually have teams that play out of our facility as well.
And is it focused on a specific sport, several sports?
Our speed and agility is multi-sports, football, basketball, you know, lacrosse, all that. What we mainly focus on is baseball and softball. I played professionally, as did Ben, and after we got done, this is, you know, I wanted to stay in the game, and coaching was, for me, I enjoyed it, but I really like working one-on-one with the kids, and that's what we do now is mainly private instruction.
And what age kids?
We do all ages. I've got kids that start as early as 5 and 6 and all the way up through college age.
So you got 5-year-olds hitting a fastball or curveball?
Yeah. You know what's amazing is some of the kids that come in there, you know, you wouldn't think that a 5-year-old would be able to take instruction, but it's really cool to see those kids, you know, that can barely hold the bat, understand what you're saying, and start improving.
I bet it's fun to see. Sometimes you can see really early on those that just have a lot of natural talent. And you can also probably, you two are probably getting better and better at identifying the coachable kid and a not coachable kid. That's a big piece of it, isn't it?
Oh yeah, go ahead, Ben. I'll let you take that one.
Speak to that coachable aspect, if you would.
Is Ben coachable?
No, there's a lot of talented, really talented folks that can't make it even in the collegiate ranks just because they're not coachable. Am I right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. We have kids that, you know, we'll say do, you know, one thing, and that one thing for whatever reason they can't do, whether it be turn your back foot or work your front elbow, something, you know, very simple. And, you know, for whatever reason, they're thinking, I got to get back to my Xbox. I got to do, there's a million things I'd rather be doing
know?
Here.
There's priorities.
You know? And they're too young to realize what their parents are doing for them. You know, right. the amount of money they're spending for them to come in here and get their training. And you just got to work through it. And eventually it clicks. And then all of a sudden the kid that you're like, man, this kid is a punk. I don't want to work with this kid. You know, all of a sudden, you know, 6 months later, he's your favorite kid to work with. It's just, it's. Kids are weird, man. They just
the guy who works with them every day.
Exactly.
That's what we're going to walk away with. Kids are weird.
Yep.
Well, being a parent, I could vouch for
that.
So
yeah, I think you're on
track. We need psychology degrees before we need the the baseball stuff sometimes.
Now, how do you manage that, the kids that are kind of there because the parent wants them to be there, but maybe, like you said, they'd rather be playing Xbox or they'd rather be doing something else?
You know, the one thing that I've noticed is if you make it fun for them, if you, you know, get them to play a game with you or, you know, make it a competition, a lot of kids that are like, oh, I don't really want to be here, as soon as you turn it into something where it's a challenge, where they're trying to beat you, and we'll do it a lot where, you know, if the kid wins, they make us do push-ups. And so, you know, you can see the kid's face light up. He's like, oh, okay, you know, I really want to try to do this. So, you know, you don't run across a lot of those kids, but every once in a while, you know, you have to kind of tweak how you're teaching them. But it's cool to see those kids progress when they first came in, that, you know, they were kind of iffy. And then 6 months later, like he said, now they love coming in. You can see them getting better every day. And, you know, part of why I did this and Ben's the same way is, you know, when I was younger, there wasn't anywhere around my area to get private instruction. And we talk about it all the time, you know. If we'd have had somebody coaching us from when we were 6 or 7, you know, individually, you know, how good we could have been. So what I really love is being able to give back to these kids and work with them to know that, you know, by the time they're 18, 19, 20, they're going to learn stuff that I didn't learn until I was in pro ball, you know, and they're going to be able to take that and further their careers and get a college education out of this game. Pro ball, what I always tell the kids, is a bonus. If I can see a kid go get a free education because of a game, then that's, you know, that's our ultimate goal. And we've got some kids that have been with us for 4 and 5 years now that are getting to that right there where they're about to go into college. So it's really rewarding to be able to see that.
Now, and it's important for parents to realize that it's easier to learn something right the first time, right?
Absolutely.
And build the fundamentals correctly than it is to do something incorrectly and then try to unlearn it and then relearn the right way. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The younger kids, it's cool because you're building their foundation. They're being taught the right way from day one. So now they're going to carry those skills for the rest of their life instead of, you know, like a 15-year-old that's been working his whole life and been taught it one way. Now you're having to break years and years of bad habits. So,
and that's much more difficult.
Oh, yeah. Much more difficult, especially if you get one that's a little hard-headed.
Because the worst thing I would think is that if they have some level of success doing it maybe not mm-hmm. technically correct, and you're saying do it different, and then they get kind of worse before they get better, and
exactly.
then to stick with it through that must be really challenging for that age.
Yeah, success is one of the toughest things we fight. Kids at a lower level who are, you know, maybe have a lot more talent, you know, and get by just by doing it their way, just because they're bigger, stronger, what we have to tell them is, hey, when you get older, this isn't going to work. It's not going to work. Trust me, it's not going to work. You know, you got to break them down and get them down there. And they're like, why? I'm still hitting the ball over the fence.
Right,
well,
I'm the best winning. Player on the team. What are you talking about? You know, what do you know?
So maybe you can give me some real-time counsel and tell me if I'm off track. But I get the idea that even if my kid is not going to be a collegiate athlete, early on, if they can get some good instruction, they're still going to have more confidence, enjoy the game more, and it's going to be a better life skill, even if they don't even, you know, go past even high school ball, right? Is that accurate?
Yeah. You know, the one thing that I love is just, you know, you see a kid and you can tell right away, okay, this kid doesn't have a lot of talent, but what's really cool is to see them come back and say, hey, I got 3 hits in my game, and you can see them enjoying it. They're having fun. And that's, you know, this game is fun. That's why you play it. You know, you don't want it to be, you know, miserable when you're out on the field. And so a lot of the kids, you know, they're going out there, and now they're just loving going to the ballpark. You know, they're not going to make it to college or pro ball.
But they'll be a better engineer.
Exactly. Right? You know, and they're going to look back and be like, I remember when I was playing Little League and, you know, I had this much fun. And then they can take that and teach it to their kids. And, you know, let their kids enjoy it when they go to the ballpark. So it's really – it's right. I love it. I mean, it doesn't feel like a job to me, so I, you know, I can't ever complain.
I would think that there's benefits. Forget about, like you said, the scholarships and things like that. Just being part of a team helps you in life. And then you're also – you're keeping them active, and they're doing stuff, and you know, they're not the fat kid anymore. Now they're the active kid, you know, and we're battling childhood obesity everywhere you turn. So by them being the active kid – not only is that good for that person individually, but it's also good for the whole family because they're role modeling an active lifestyle to the whole family.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's, you know, the kids that come in, they're eager to learn, but they don't always want to show it. So, you know, yeah, exactly.
You know, they got that cool factor thing going on.
Oh, I know what I'm doing. So, but yeah, you get the families involved, and now you get the younger brothers coming up through that want to be like their big brothers, right. Hitting the ball good. So, yeah, it's really cool.
So baseball, softball, those are your kind of core things, but you mentioned also you have a multi-sport kind of fitnessy aspect of this as well.
The back section of our building, it's about 5,000 square feet, is nothing but speed and agility. It's dedicated to speed and agility and training, and even in baseball, you know, you see the guys in the big leagues and stuff like that, lifting and speed training is becoming an integral part. You have to do it if you want to be successful. And we've got we actually had some AAA guys from the Braves that were up there doing training this year. We had a bunch of college football players that are doing training back there.
And what are some of the things when you say training? Like what are
they lifting weights?
Yeah, they're lifting weights
for baseball.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We've got our kids at 13 and 14 start lifting weights for baseball.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then what are some of the examples of like a speed stuff you got there?
We've got like the explosive drills where you're doing the box training and the
like
footwork
plyometrics.
Training. Yeah, exactly. So you're wanting to do form running where you're faster, you're, that first step is quicker, just like you would be in football. So and we've got guys that do that specifically. They we've got ex-NFL guys that are back there doing our speed training. And they're outstanding. So, and they work with, I mean, we even have volleyball players that are back there.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So, because that that explosive first step, I guess, that translates to almost every sport, I would think.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, both of you guys can catch a ground ball, and you can swing a bat, and then you decide to go into business. I want to talk a little bit about the business side of this thing. Did that just knock you on your butt, or did that come fairly easy, too?
To be 100% honest, it kind of fell in our lap. Mm-hmm. We were still playing when I first got drafted during the offseason. I was looking to make a little extra money, and I was like, hey, you know, what better way than to stay in the game and work? And me and Ben played in college together. We got drafted the same year. I got drafted by San Diego, and he got drafted by the Reds. And during the offseason, I was like, hey, you want to come live in Atlanta, and we'll train together and give some lessons, make a little extra money. And after we got done, I got done a little bit before he did.
And done means fired?
Yeah. Is that right? Essentially. That would be getting the pink slip. That would be getting the pink slip. Big guy calls you on the phone and says, hey, you're not playing anymore.
So it wasn't your choice.
Yeah, that was not a personal choice on my end. That was, hey, man, you might want to go do something else. But no.
We call it freeing up your future.
Yeah, exactly. In 2009 was when I got released, and Ben was still playing. I came home and was actually I had finished up my college degree while I was in school. That was one thing I promised my parents was I left school as a junior, and I promised them that, you know, when I got done, I would go back and finish my degree.
And you did that.
Yeah, and
good
I did that.
You.
So, and so I actually finished it during the off season in 2008. So I finished it while I was still playing. I was lucky enough to go back and finish up. And when I got done, I'd actually applied for my master's at Kennesaw State and was going to go get my MBA. And was doing lessons just to, you know, fill in the free time and stuff like that. And it just took off. And I got more and more people and more and more people. And I was like, I need a bigger building. You know, I want. And Ben got done with that season and was debating on whether he wanted to go back or not. And came on board with me. And it just exploded. And we moved into the building that we're in now in January of 2010. And it's just been growing ever since.
So Ben's really the key to this whole operation.
Yeah, he's the face of the organization. He's the reason everybody comes in.
The pretty face.
So and one thing I tell everybody is, you know, in this business, it's not about the facility. It's not about how nice your equipment is and stuff like that. Because I've worked at other facilities. I've watched really really multi-million dollar facilities. I watched them crumble. In this business, it's about your coaches. And I am lucky enough to have the three best coaches, in my opinion, in the area working for me. We're successful so far as a business because of the guys that I have working for me. And that's you can't replace that. You know, people say, well, why don't you hire more guys and stuff like that? I said, it's because I can't find anybody that's going to do as good of a job as the guys that I already have. And so the reason we're a success so far is because of those guys. So you surround yourself with good coaching, and then people come.
That seems to be a recurring theme here today.
So before we wrap, let's leave parents of kids that can and should be involved in sports, which it's almost like every woman works. I think every kid ought to get involved in some sort of sport or physical activity. What counsel, if any, what do you wish that parents would know, think, do before you ever start working with them or their kids? What are some things we can do at home to support the coaching that you're doing and to support the right path of development for our kids?
You want to take that one or you want me to take it?
Well, you know, what I've noticed with a lot of the kids, it's kind of different for each kid. You know, some parents are really good at, you know, hey, you know, do what Ben says, do what Casey says, you know, let's use the same verbiage. And then, you know, some parents go drop the kid off, then they go to Target, do whatever. And sometimes that's the overbearing parent that knows, okay, if I say anything to Bobby, he's going to break down. He's not going to listen to me at all. He's going to be ticked off and, you know, day's pretty much over. So it's really different with, you know, the kind of parent that you are. You know, some kids will listen to dad, some kids won't. 95% are daddy deaf. That's why we have a job, you know. It's not that we, you know, we know, you know, a million times more than what the dads know. I mean, most dads that come in know kind of what to teach their son, and they're like, here, you do it, because he won't listen to me. Right. So, you know, just you know, keeping them coming in, making sure that, you know, they're at home, they're not, you know, just sitting on the couch playing Xbox 24/7, which, you know, I've done it.
Yeah.
But,
well,
you know.
The to add to that, you know, the one thing that I see is you can see when it's not fun for the kid anymore. And the one thing I could recommend to parents is make sure that it always stays fun. Give them the option of wanting to play. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to play, don't make them play. Now, there's a difference between, daddy, I don't want to go, I'm tired, and when it becomes a job at 9 years old. You want them to enjoy the sport and to always want to go and want to work. There's a little bit of push that has to come, but, you know, you see where parents are over the top sometimes. So just make it fun for them, because then they'll enjoy it and they'll want to keep playing instead of, I don't want to do this anymore. So I kind of treat it like school. You know, you want school, you want them to enjoy learning. Well, if it becomes miserable, you know, you got to push them a little bit, but at the same time, you want them to be enthusiastic about it. You want them to shut it out and not want to do it anymore.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
So how can our listeners learn more, get in touch with you guys?
Easiest way is through our website. It's www.jcssportstraining.com. And you can check out, we're on Facebook. Miss Barbie has done a fantastic job with our Facebook page.
Really?
So yes, she's been a real asset to us recently. So our Facebook page and our website has all the information. We have several summer camps coming up during the summer.
Yeah, tell us about the camp.
Yeah, one thing that we're doing that's actually new this year is we're doing a baseball day camp. Usually when we do camps, we'll do a 3-day camp. You know, it's instruction-based, and then the kids are go home. Something that we're adding in this year is we're going to do a baseball day camp as an introduction to kids to baseball. And so we're going to do it for 4 to 8-year-olds, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 to noon. And it'll be where the kids could come in and it won't be in-depth instruction. It's basic fundamentals. We'll play a lot of games where they'll really enjoy it, and it's something where the parents can, during the summer, drop the kids off for a few hours, and but they know they're going in not only to have fun, but they're going to learn something a little bit about baseball. And even for kids that have never played the game before, hey, you know, let's go try this out. And now they get introduced to it, and they love it.
And be nice to the other kids because there's a lot of bats around.
Exactly.
Right? You work on your personal skills.
Yeah, you're going to learn a lot of personal skills, team-building skills, and it gets them, like Ben said, gets them off the couch. They'll be doing stuff that's athletic all morning long, having fun. And then the parents will have the rest of the day to do whatever they want. So.
And when does that start? Do you know the dates?
I believe it's May 30th is when we're starting.
Right. End of May, and it's throughout the summer?
Yeah, it'll be throughout the summer. It's May 30th all the way to August 10th. It'll be Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And it's $30 a day. It's $75 if you want to do the whole week, or $275 for the month.
Wow.
So we're trying to keep it really affordable because, you know, we want the parents to let them come in, let them have fun. But we are going to have to keep it to a small group. And then we'll also we do a lot of camps with Brian Jordan from the Atlanta Braves. We just did a spring break camp, and we have camps, you know, year-round with him in the winter and at spring and during the summer as well. So all the information, like I said, will be on our website.
And the website again?
It's www.jcssportstraining.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our guest here today. We will see you all next time.